Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, October the 9th, 2009. A big number gets bigger. We'll discuss it today on Commodity Week.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with the director of the Crops Division for USDA NASS. His name is Joe Prusaki. Our panelists today in studio are Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Lafayette, Indiana, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Mike Georgie from Allendale. He's in Mahomet, Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's open the discussion with this question. Mike, how quickly, Zuzolo, that is, do you think that the trade dismissed this morning's reports from USDA and looked forward to freeze and, I don't know, gibberella and diplodia and trains that aren't loaded yet in the Midwest? There's just a whole series of things to talk about today.
Is that gibberella with clam sauce?
Yeah.
I guess I feel like that maybe with the beans, the report had to be looked at pretty hard because we had traded a very bearish number up until Monday of this week. And the outside markets, the weaker dollar, weather coming in helped turn the tide on Tuesday, and we were up from there on out in the beans, Todd. So I think the report was taken at face value and had to be traded Friday on the beans. And the corn, I do think that the trade maybe thinks the number in the yield, especially being 164.2, is probably obsolete at this point.
Mike Georgie?
Well, I think they looked at it for about 10 minutes, and that was right at about 7:40 they changed their mind. So I think the first report was they were bearish. But, you know, I mean, it is weather. We're not getting the crop to the elevators. I think that's a big part of what's going on. You know, they say the dollar's weak, but I don't think that's got a lot to do with it. It's a fact that they had a big crop and they haven't raised ending stocks by a whole lot, so they're still bullish.
And Kurt Kimmel.
Well, I think trade wanted to spin a bearish report so they get a lower open to buy it. I think they wanted to buy it when they came in first thing in the morning, even before the report, just as they hinted on earlier here, the outside factors here. But we'll come in here Sunday evening, Monday morning, and see what the forecast shows and see what type of harvest progress and other news we see.
All right. So let's take a look at some of the numbers, and we'll go through some of the USDA numbers, some of the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade. USDA number now for the corn is at a 13.018 billion bushels. That's up from the 12.955 that was forecast in September in Chicago. Futures finished the day like this in the corn pit. December contract on the week had a high of $3.73. Its low was at $3.27.5. Settlement price there was at $3.62.25. Finished 28.75 higher from the previous week. And December corn for next year at $4.05.25, up 22.5 cents. So what do we make of this as a corn producer when we're looking out at a field that we're no longer sure, given all kinds of conditions, freeze, molds, if it's corn after corn in particular, sign of some bad news we're hearing from Iowa, from some of the early harvest of corn after corn. What are we to make of it? And how do you react if you do at all? Up until this point, most of the folks that have sat across the table from us have said, you know what, go ahead and sell it, but, well, we're up 28 cents for the week.
Well, we've made some catch-up recommendations on selling. It depends, you know, how far along you're sold up. The biggest volume we did Friday was we bought a ton of put options for guys. That way you do have some downside protection, but you still have the cash open due to the factors that we're seeing outside our window. So there's creative strategies to keep you in the game in here, but we come in here next week and the weather cooperates and the outside markets fall apart, there is some downside risk price-wise in the futures. When you look at the cash side of the equation, it's a matter of how much of damage control you're going to have damage-wise in your field.
You know what, maybe, and this is I think this may be a very hard week for all of you to answer this question, but are you neutral, bearish, friendly, bullish the corn market at this point?
On the short-term scale, you got to be friendly.
Well, I think you're friendly the corn market until the weather breaks. I still think we're going to come under harvest pressure if we still keep seeing the good yields that we're going to see. I think you're going to come under pressure again. I'm not going to say the low was in or the low is going to be broke, but I think there's still going to be pressure once we get into full blown harvest.
Friendly with the idea, Todd, that the wheat needs to be less of a leader to the downside, and we need to set a goal for the Deese corn. My personal goal is to get the 376 level taken out. That opens you up technically, and if we go above 376 on Sunday, Monday time period, then I think the trade will have assumed then that we are going lower in yield and we're going to slip below a 1.5 carryover. And so in that sense, that would put me into a friendly category for at least 30 or 60 days.
Mike, do you think that the trade is ahead of the rest of the folks on where this corn market ought to be? So the question is, why was there a 28-cent rally coming in this week, coming into a USDA crop production report, which most people were thinking, hey, it's going to show a big number and a bigger number, and in fact it did. So I suppose the question really is, has enough been priced in at this point for maybe what the trade already knew or is considering might be out there?
Well, I think there's a couple factors that have put the funds buying. I mean, in the last 4 to 5 days, the estimate is they've bought like 65,000 contracts. Gold breaking $1,000. People are saying commodities are cheap, corn's cheap, so they're buying it. That has nothing to do with the report that came out today. They're saying grains are cheap, the dollar's going down, so they're saying, hey, I'm not going to put my money in the dollar anymore. I think I'm going to go out and buy commodities. And that's why we've got interest in the corn and beans. The fact of the weather that, you know, nearing the middle of October and elevators aren't getting any grains in, and they've got trains waiting and they're needing the grain to move. So in all that, that's what's made this come up to this week, and the fact that we have got bigger numbers and the numbers today did not show a big increase in ending stocks just made it a more bullish scenario for everybody.
Now, Kurt, how do you as a farmer digest all of this? And I guess I'm thinking, if you say, all right, the dollar's been weak, so exports may be better. USDA says I have a great big crop. I'm not certain that's the case anymore, but the numbers still support the fact that there's a big crop out there, I suppose. We will find out more as the combines run. But there could be a lot of diplodia you could take or other types of mold. The rate schedules for most of the elevators that I have talked to are changing or are getting worse. The discounts are getting deeper. And it looks like even if you have a big crop that with a higher price, it's going to be a rough haul through this process this fall. And then do we have any experience as of recent years with backing a crop up into the month of November and maybe into December?
No, it's going to be a rough haul. I mean, as far as making money, discounts, drying, you know, it's going to be one thing after another. You just got to sort of tackle it as best you can. Initially, most producers are going to move this crop here as we get into the field. Don't want to run the risk of storage. The elevator, they'll want to move it. So this crop's going to come to town. There's going to be a lot of pressure in the market. The best basis is right now. Saturday morning here, there's going to be 10, 12 cent premium if you can bring corn in right away. So you got to look for those advantages. You got to shop around and try to do the best you can. We've been moving a lot of ownership to paper. That way you've cashed it in. You know where you're at. If you're not willing to sell it and want to hang on, like I mentioned before, the put option is the best strategy you have before, and then you leave your cash strategy in the open position.
Do you want to own soybeans? You want to keep that crop, or do you want to sell it?
We want to move the beans. We feel that the South American, unless they have some type of weather situation materialize, is going to have another big crop there. Argentina's is, you know, beans, they get some rain this winter, they're going to probably have 20 million metric more tons than they did a year ago. Once we turn the calendar to 2010, we feel that China's going to start buying the Southern Hemisphere beans.
Mike, USDA's number was 3.25 billion bushel crop. That's a little smaller than what the trade had expected at a 3291. USDA's last number was a 3.245 billion bushel crop. So not that much different. And they did adjust acres for both the corn and the soybeans. They dropped them down based on some FSA numbers. So average national yields sort of did go up, but mostly that's probably because there were worse acres that didn't get figured into that. So on the beans, when you look out over the next several months, the marketplace has said, and everybody on the other side of this table again has said, go ahead and market it across the scale. The markets, there's no carry in the market. Kurt says, continue to do that. Is there any reason not to follow that advice?
Well, I think you've got to follow that advice because, I mean, if you look at the numbers we got today, you know, we increased our supply of wheat to 148 days. We increased our supply of beans to 75 days. We decreased our supply of corn to 47 days. So the carry is there in the corn. You're better off putting it in the bin. The beans is like Kurt said, we're going to get more beans coming in next year. We feel, too, that once Brazil and Argentina gets the planted and growing, there's a good chance that China could go to them instead of us.
Okay, so November beans this week had a high of 968.5, a low at 878.75. Settlement price there was 79 cents higher on the week, $9.64. Next year's November's up 62.25 at 949. Mike Zuzulo, I'm going to throw the wheat numbers in, and then you can play either the beans or the wheat or both, depending on what you want to do. December contract, 483 in the wheat for the high, the low at 490, or rather 439.25. Settlement price at $4.68, up 26.75 cents. July, the harvest month at 516.25, and that finished the week 30.75. You like the beans or the wheat better to talk about, not as in price.
I guess quickly on the wheat, it's still fundamentally the leader to the downside, and I think that the fact that the Southern Hemisphere numbers are going to be coming online here, if there's not any harvest delays, it's probably going to be tough between now and Christmas to get anything generated in the wheat from a supply and demand standpoint. We have to watch the CFTC and any changes they make, though. That's been a real monkey on the back of traders, and it's kept a lot of long out of the wheat market, in my opinion. On the beans, I'm a little bit of a contrarian with the other two guys who I think they're right on the money with everything they said. I just feel like that the report showed the trade that we don't have a 44-bushel yield out there being grown, and I think that kind of stopped some guys dead in their tracks. When we got the Informa numbers last week, we got the FC Stone numbers last week, I think the trade was gearing up for a long-term sell position in the beans on ideas that South America is going to plant a bunch of beans. I think the corn-bean ratio is back in play here where the beans may gain on the corn short term. So I would try and play the beans a little bit more and not just dump them immediately.
I'd like each of you to think about this, and maybe Mike, we'll start with you. I bet you've got some numbers in mind. Freeze comes in this weekend, picks up Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, North Dakota, parts of northern Illinois, but not the bulk of Illinois, nor the eastern Corn Belt. What happens on Monday, and do you have some numbers for topside and downside?
Well, again, I think the 389 level is a target in Dease corn under that kind of scenario, Todd. I think in the November beans, because we are able to get up to that 960 level, you have to start putting a pencil on plus $10 under that kind of a scenario.
I think corn's having a tough time getting higher. I think we're only looking at about 100 million bushels being lost. It's a totally different scenario than if our frost would have hit in early August when we started talking about it. So they're not looking at as much loss in the corn. So it's not a factor anymore as much as it was. So I think they're looking more toward supply and weather and things like that.
We feel we've already priced in that type of frost freeze, and in order to go much higher on frost freeze, you got to go deeper south and deeper east.
All right, here's some of the rest of the numbers as they finished up at the CME Group in Chicago. For the livestock side, October live cattle had a high this week of 83.10, a low at 81.80. Settlement price was 82.62 and a half, a loss list this week of 32 and a half cents. October feeder cattle at $94.17.5 per 100 pounds, up 62.5 cents from the previous week. And the lean hog futures, an October high for $51.50 on the week, a low at $48.80. Settlement price at $50.85. It finished $1.60 higher. When we return, we'll talk with Joe Prasaki of USDA NASS about the numbers and the report and how it was all figured up.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. October got off to a cold, damp start this week, and the weather slowed crop development and kept producers out of the fields the last half of the week. Temperatures were 3 to 5 degrees below normal this week. Highs were only in the low to mid-60s early in the week, with some low 70s in southwestern and southern Illinois. On Thursday, rain associated with a storm system centered over the Central Plains spread from Missouri across Illinois and into Indiana, and on that day, temperatures struggled to reach the mid-50s. The rain associated with that storm was heavy in many areas of the southern half of Illinois, and flash flood warnings were issued for a number of counties along Interstate 70. Flood watches extended from Texas through southern Illinois and Indiana. In contrast to the heavy rain in the southern half of the state, only scattered light amounts occurred in northern Illinois. High pressure will settle in over Illinois during the weekend, and it looks like most of Illinois may get only a glancing blow of the cold air. Freezing temperatures may occur over northern Illinois on Sunday, but cloudiness associated with an upper-level disturbance may hold off freezing temperatures on Monday and Tuesday. Temperatures next week will generally be below normal. By next Thursday, another weather system very similar to the system at the end of this week will likely spread rain across Illinois into Indiana through Friday, followed by colder weather next weekend. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
You're listening to Commodity Week. It was a production of Illinois Public Media recorded on the 9th day of October 2009. Our guests in studio include Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting down of Lafayette, Indiana. Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. And Mike Georgie of Allendale. He's from Mahomet, Illinois. On the phone line with us from Washington, D.C. is a very tired, I suspect, at this point, Joe Prasaki with USDA NASS. He serves as the director of their crops division and spent the night on Thursday evening, Friday morning, in lockup with the crop production numbers. Hi, how are you today? Did you finally get some sleep?
Well, yeah, it wasn't too bad. I got home probably 11:30 and slept till 4, so.
What time do you go into lockup?
Last night we left about 10 out in the burbs to get downtown, around 11 or so.
11 o'clock. And what do you do in lockup? I mean, are you actually making the figures finally, or are you playing cards? Or what are you?
No, not playing cards. Because, like,
these guys are think you're playing cards or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, so it was really interesting. I'll just run through that real quick. Because, like, last night, you know, the doors lock. We'll use the word the doors lock up. I mean, you literally can't get out of the wing. The guard's checking IDs to let you in and that sort of stuff. And then Once everything's sealed up, last night we started with citrus because October's our first citrus forecast of the season. I mean, you know, the Midwestern guys, you know, it's not important to them, but it's really interesting. I mean, down in Florida, buddy, they're about as excited as like you guys are. Mm-hmm. You know, and we come in with a forecast way below what they're expecting. There's things that are crazy in the citrus market today.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, we started with citrus. Then that wasn't too bad. That was easy. And then we got the corn. Corn was next up. Corn was interesting. We'll get back to that, you guys. It was tough. Soybeans was easy. We didn't do wheat. We finished that a week ago, 2 weeks ago. Then we had cotton. Cotton was kind of tough last night,
too. Okay, so why was soybean easy?
Well, soybeans, it's really interesting, you know, because when you go into the room, you look, basically what we've done is we use what we call the term spec states, non-spec states. You could think it's important, really important states, and then other states. The smaller states like the Alabamas, Tennessees of the world, we've pretty much worked up that data ahead of time. That would have been like Wednesday afternoon working through Thursday. But like the big states like Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, you know, South Dakota and such, we did not see what our field office were thinking until we locked up.
Mm-hmm.
And so in beans, the data comes in. This is what the, you know, like what our states say. When you add up what the states say, we look at the data. It was like real close. It's like, oh, this is easy. I mean, it was, you know, when you look at the data at the national level, or we call it the regional level, the 11 states, everything was in alignment. So, beans are going to be easy. That was easy. You know, it made sense with what we were talking about. You know, corn, on the other hand, you're looking at data and you're trying to figure out what are the states looking at. You know, I think, you know, sometimes, you know, people say, okay, hey, you know, are you influenced by weather activities? I don't know. You know, because this was supposed to be as of October 1. So I think, you know, some people are nervous in our field offices, I think, in general. Not necessarily field office. You know, where is this crop going to, you know, be? And that's why we have this national board. I'm sitting in Washington. I look at data, you know, and here's what the data says. And so we, you know, we kind of hash things around. And like you guys, you know, all know, it's all about what's that final grain weight going to be on corn. And that's what we hashed around.
Well, yeah, I saw that. And you raised the ear weight again. You think you're right? I mean,
well,
obviously you do.
As of today, we are. the thing that's interesting, you know, because that's one thing when I talk to Lance. Lance is our head of our chief of crops branch. You know, and it's like we have the one slide we show during the briefing. It shows where the samples are. And, well, 70% of our samples on corn are in the dent or, the dent or beyond mode. You know, it's dent or mature. Well, that means we had field samples from 70% of our samples. So that leads one to, at least to me, that means, well, we're probably in the neighborhood on the grain weight.
Can I back you up? How many were mature? Because I looked at it and I wondered about that because it makes a big difference on the milk line because it can be, I mean, there's a it can be in dent, but most of the weight's not there at this point.
This is guessing of that. Of that 70%, I'm trying to remember the numbers. I know I left that sheet at work.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, I know. That was a good one. But I would say it was about a third.
Yeah.
A third of it was mature.
So pretty close to Monday's USDA numbers, the weekly progress numbers.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, your mic's on.
It's about a third was mature. Is that pretty close to what we had Monday, I'm guessing?
Yeah, I think it was 35, 40, something like that.
Yeah, it's in that neighborhood. And then you had another chunk, and you get another a little over a third that was in that dent stage. And so that gets us to about that 70%.
Right. Well, you said you had corn was a different beast. What was it about corn that you had a fight
over?
Well,
it's just, you know, when people look at the data, they all have different opinions. You know, and it's like when you're in the room and you try to come up with consensus, it's like, okay, well, you don't necessarily take the average. You know, when, you know, there's like 10 of us in the room, you're looking independently at the data and you put your numbers in, and it's like, okay, why are you here? Well, I think this, and somebody says, well, I'm worried about frost, and then Carol, who's the chair, she says, well, remember, that's not us. I mean, this is what's going on here. You know, and you go back and forth.
Well, how do you come up with so many different numbers? Don't you just get the numbers from the state, or do you have a second set of numbers of you were thinking about?
We get the numbers from our field offices. Those are recommendations.
Yeah.
Okay, they come in. And then you have to remember, then, the states are each looking at their data individually. So the folks in Indiana are looking at their data, Iowa and so forth, and in Illinois. They make a recommendation. Now, when we look at the data in headquarters, we'll look at, for corn, there's the 10-state region. It's on whatever, it's those big 10. okay? And then we'll look at the data individual for that whole group. I don't look at states then. I look at those 10 states all at one block, okay? Okay, well, this is what the corn yield's going to be for that whole block of states. And it's like, okay, then you have to go back and say, okay, well, if the states don't add up to that number, why don't they? You know, for what the states sent in. And so you have to remember there's always some wiggle room in statistics. There's always a band that you got to go back and look and see, okay, what were the people in the states looking at, you know, each one, and so forth. Then you have to make sure everything feathers together then.
Hey, Joe, we had, about always had producers go out and visit and spend time with you and lockout, and the reports I get back, producers are very impressed and very professional, very well done. So just a little feedback there for you on that.
Oh, thanks.
Just you talked about data, and you're talking about making decision. On the final number, how much is probably actual data, and what percentage is actual judgment involved?
Oh, now in October, we're probably in the it's 80 plus percent. It's actual data,
okay.
80 to 90%. You know, because it all depends on the grain weight. Ears, we got nailed right now. We pushed up ears a little bit, I mean, but, you know, because it's basically a survivability model on that, and the ears are solid, it looks like. And then it's all about the grain weight. But then we're sitting with about 70%, like I said before, of those samples that we actually had lab data on. And so I'm feeling pretty confident. Now, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen this weekend? You know, like all week, and I'm listening to you guys, you know. You know, coming up, I'm reading the newspapers and stuff, and there's all about this, frost and light test weights and stuff like that. And, you know, and I call our labs and say, are you guys seeing this coming in? And they're saying no. And then when I see the data, I don't see it, you know, in the data we see.
Okay.
Switching over the beans, a question I got, you know, we've talked about how we think, you know, countries are going to buy from South America instead of us, but you've increased the exports for beans this time. You know, are they going to still buy from us, or how do you come up with that?
Well, yeah, theory? Now that's what the World Board, you know, that's a different set of guys working on that. But generally what they're thinking is, you know, cheap dollar, somebody's going to buy us, you know. That's basically what they're thinking, too.
Joe, going back to the yields, does that mean your upper Midwest yields, like Michigan up 7, Minnesota up 3, Iowa record up 1, North Dakota, South Dakota up 3, Nebraska up 9 at a record, are those on the table in November based upon this weekend's weather?
Sure, yeah. Because when we come back in November, we will reassess, you know, because, you know, we will look at everything. Because by then, you know, we should have because – you know, we should have pretty much everything should be mature by then, but, you know, this has been a weird year. Then we'll relook at everything.
Joe, we appreciate you being with us today, Joe, and thanks for your candidness.
Okay, sure. Hey, well, guys, take care. Thanks a lot, Todd.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Joe Persaki is with USDA NAS, serves as the division leader for the Stats and Crops Division. Now, a final word from our panelists in studio, Mike Zuzolo.
Well, we're going to have to watch with the weather, the report, and the disease. Let's watch that cash market and the basis next week when we come back.
Mike Georgie?
I think what Mike said, the other Mike will say the same thing.
All right. And, well, Kurt Kimmel.
I've not had the opportunity to be out in Washington for a lockup, but I'd love to go. I've heard a lot of positive things. These guys really try to do the best they can.
Thanks much, and thank you for listening. That is this edition of Commodity Week. Be sure to visit us online. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.